welcome into a very specialist edition of Sports Club. That makes me Jeremy the Impact York. That makes you my amazing listening audience. Thank you once again for taking time out of your day, or when you listen to me while you work out or get teeth pulled, whatever. I mean, whatever works. I'm totally cool with any of that. You know, in these trying times, this is going to be a slightly different type of show than we usually do. Not different as far as how we do things, but basically today I've got some NFL free agency and trades to talk about, and I've got a lot of pro wrestling because those are the main things that are on right now. In the same way that pro wrestling is doing a lot of empty arena shows, well, that's we're zagging when the world is zagging. I've watched a lot of wrestling. I watch a lot of wrestling anyway. It's one of my favorite sports. And hopefully you enjoy it. I'm going to go over just some things that happened during each of the shows, kind of where I think things are going. You know, it is WrestleMania season for WWE, but I mean, we got some Ring of Honor, some AEW to talk about, some Impact Wrestling a little, you know. And should be a good show. Like I said, we'll finish up with some NFL stuff because there was a lot going on. Just when the world had all but hit pause on the sports nation outside of wrestling, the NFL said, hold my beer. And as my phone alert goes off, that is just sad. It is a calendar reminder that Atlanta United would be in Chicago to play the Fire today. In 30 minutes, if they were actually playing. Yeah. Okay. Trying times, we're doing things different. Let's start. And yes, I did watch last night's two, but two Fridays ago, SmackDown. This was the first time they did a empty arena show. They've been doing them ever since. But this one was at the Performance Center. That's where they've been doing them. You had Michael Cole and Triple H, who were the announcers. Triple H made a couple statements throughout the time, too, that this was the safest way they saw to do things. They were going to continue that way as long as they could until things get back to normal. I still stand by my statement from last week. I don't know if I said it on the show. I got us at right at 2 to 2.5 weeks of kind of back to basics like we are. And then I think we're going to start to kind of crawl out, and we're going to kind of crawl out a little bit and be approaching getting back to normal. Won't be full out. Might take us a year to recover from everything going on. Overall, financially, you know, physically, psychologically, all that. But I think within 2 to 3 weeks, we're going to be on the other side of this. Just my opinion. I'm no doctor. But just from the stuff that I've gathered. And also, if you listen to my show because I am your distraction or I am your way to do something a little different, then I greatly appreciate that. Let's move to SmackDown, like I said. It opened up with Sasha Banks and Bayley cutting a promo. Bayley is basically saying that she's beat everybody in the division. And there's just nobody on her level. While she's quite good, and I'll give her that, I disagree. Granted, she has beaten everybody, but that's neither here nor there, because after a while, they all beat each other. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross decide to interrupt, and we end up getting a tag match out of this. It's a pretty good tag match outside of... For one, not the world's biggest Sasha Banks fan. She's an okay performer. Bayley, exceptional performer. Alexa Bliss, Nikki Cross, two of my favorites. They are very, very good in-ring workers and talents. This was a really, really good tag match. I went back and forth, of course, everybody trying their moves, everybody doing everything. It really was was really telling a good story. And then they had Asuka come out and threw Alexa Bliss into the side of the ring when she was on the outside. I know where it's going. It's setting up a match. Let's see, it wasn't this week. It'll be next week, next Friday night, where Alexa Bliss and Asuka will be against each other. I don't know. It was way too random. Just kind of way too random. But Sasha Banks puts the bank statement on. He taps out. End of the match. Then this is starting to be a little bit of a theme. And I'll give him some credit there. But they decided to show the Elimination Chamber tag match from the Sunday before, which was the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. It featured the New Day and the Usos, who started. Lucha House Party was also in the match. See, and a lot of times there is a strategy, and truth be told, I go a little behind the curtain when I talk wrestling. I did help put on a show for a couple years. Did a little bit of training here and there. I would have liked to do a lot more, but chose to step away because I had some other stuff going, and I think I made the right choice because I'm here now. But Lucha House Party is your fun high flyer that's in these types of matches. They're there. You're pretty sure they're not going to win, but they're there for entertainment value, and Lucha House Party always brings it. It did seem like the Chamber was limiting the competitors a little bit. Like they were a little more timid. It's probably because that thing hurts. It hurts to fall on steel grates and metal chains and stuff like that. So they're being a little more careful. Let's see. That's three so far. We got Lucha House Party, New Day, Usos. Heavy Machinery came in. They're kind of on a pretty good run. We'll see if they let them continue on that run or kind of knock them down a peg as WWE likes to typically do to see if you'll cover. Some really cool spots. A lot of you probably watched the pay-per-view in case you didn't. Go back and watch it. It was good. Robert Roode and Dolph came in, and at one point Miz and Morrison did as well. That was the six teams. It came down to let's see. It came down to well, Miz and Morrison won. They retained their titles. We'll get into the things that happened this week on SmackDown that will tell you what their WrestleMania is looking like because, I mean, they just beat five teams. My opinion kind of eliminates them from being in contention, but I don't think they have another team that they could throw at them. So we'll get into which of those you might see down the road. Triple H came on at that point. Said they are shorthanded with the way they are doing things. Skeleton Crew basically is what he was saying by that, but that the show was going to go on as long as that he felt it safe to do so. I trust him. He's not doing. I mean, they WWE is in a spot where they could shut down if they wanted to. But they're not going to. They're here to entertain. And they have the capabilities to do so. They make the announcement that Rob Gronkowski has signed with the WWE at this point. We know that. Mojo Rawley, who is his legitimate real life best friend. They went to college together. They seriously are great friends. It's that's not some story they're writing into it or anything. It's like, no, that's a real thing. In fact, Mojo played some football. There's a lot of former football guys that are in the WWE. Baron Corbin, Goldberg, of course. Keith Lee down at NXT. Couple of those. There's a handful more, but yeah, Baron Corbin actually was a Dolphin, for those who are going to ask. He was a, I believe, offensive lineman, unless I'm mistaken. So he not only probably knew Mojo a little bit, he knows Gronk. Let's see, where else were we at? Daniel Bryan, who had Drew Gulak, who was kind of mentoring him, kind of a weird thing there, was against Cesaro, who has Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn out there with him. Daniel ends up with the crucifix roll up for the win. A melee ensues, and Drew Gulak decides to. Well, he didn't decide to, it was decided for him. He went flying into the side of the stairs. Once again, does not feel good. I'll tell you right now, we'll say the three hardest parts of the ring. Three hardest parts. No joke, legit. For one, all of it's pretty hard. Some a little forgiving. But number one, or no, number three, we'll count it down. Number three, those steel steps. Yes, they are steel. It might be a slightly lighter steel than most, but steel is still steel. Steel is steel steel. Yep. Said that right. Number two, the ring apron. That is if you go to climb into the ring, but before stepping through the ropes, what you are standing on the outside of the ropes, but still on the ring, that's the ring apron. That is where the main supports are. You got to think about the outer walls of a house. They're going to be reinforced. They're going to be. It's a rough place to land. And number one, hardest place on a wrestling ring are these steel posts. The steel posts. They are steel. They are very, very heavy. Take it from somebody who spent the better part of 2 years putting a ring together for a show, each and every show. Those things are no joke. You do not want to drop one on your foot. You do not want to playfully swing one at someone. Yeah, they're crazy. Let's see. That moved us on to Triple H. Used a Sharpie to color in Michael Cole's soul patch a little bit. I thought it was pretty funny. Kind of a throwback to the DX days where him and Shawn Michaels would mess with Michael Cole relentlessly, which also kind of helped make Michael Cole a little bit. And I gave him a lot more credibility when the guy started joking around with him. But Michael Cole is very much one of the better announcers, not only in the game, but possibly of all time. The guy put in his dues, he's really good. He's annoying at times, but that's the role he plays too. He's very good at what he does. It brought us to the next match. We had Elias on commentary. King Corbin versus Jeff Hardy, the returning Jeff Hardy. He had said before that he was looking forward to coming back and getting back into the ring and getting his sea legs under him. His brother is no longer under contract. Just wait. Later in the show, we're going to talk about Matt Hardy. Let's see. Corbin was dominating that match early, and then Elias decided to get up and play guitar. Once again, empty arena, so you easily can hear him. It distracted Corbin. A twist of fury, which was a twist of fate with a little bit of a twist on it, and a swanton for the win for Jeff Hardy there. Corbin and Elias are eventually going to be in a match together, and I look forward to that because Corbin's one of those guys that he may annoy you on screen, but that's what he's trying to do. In the ring, he continues to get better. I think him trying to be King Corbin as opposed to just being Baron Corbin with balding hair, and it just he needed to cut his hair. Thank goodness they did it for him. But Corbin's one of those guys, it's, whether you like him or not, the guy needs your respect, or he should get your respect. Let's see, that moved us to John Cena returned. He was the only person to acknowledge the empty arena as he talked to the camera. said it was bizarre, but he missed everybody. He was glad to be back and tossed his never give up towel into the front row as he normally would. He talked for a minute, and then Bray Wyatt appeared out of the front row. He got in the ring, and they continued to talk, and it's pretty much setting up the WrestleMania match between the two of them, and that was SmackDown. Let's move to Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor, for people who don't know Ring of Honor, it is up in the I think New Jersey area is where they're kind of out of. They travel all over now. I don't want to call them a lesser because there are some really talented people there. They could easily go with people in AEW, people in New Japan, people in WWE. So it's just another brand. It doesn't quite get the coverage of the rest of them. So it's considered a smaller independent, but big time talent. That Flip Gordon, who was dressed as Dragon Lee, who was a masked wrestler, won a battle royal for a future title shot. It was really good battle royal. A lot of times, battle royals are kind of clusters. This one was pretty solid, and we didn't know that it was Flip Gordon all the way up until his hand was getting raised and he flipped his mask off. Flip is a master of disguise. We had a women's match where Sumi Sakai, who was the first Ring of Honor women's champion, she's kind of an older Asian wrestler. She's still pretty solid. She went against Fashion Mob Marty or Martina. That's it. Fashion Mob Martina. I'm just going to say it. This match was sloppy, and Martina was the one who ended up with the win there. It's just I don't know if it was just clashing of styles, but they couldn't get on the same page. That moved us to the champions, Jay Lethal and Jonathan Gresham versus Dan Moff and Jeff Cobb. Dan Moff and Jeff Cobb would be a formidable team, whether you're in an octagon, in a steel cage, a wrestling ring, in the street, on an amateur wrestling mat. These are two big, tough dudes who about do what they want. And this was the classic power versus finesse. All four of them completely highly athletic. It was just a great match all around. And Dan Moff and Jeff Cobb end up getting the victory, and they qualify for a title shot, a tag title shot somewhere down the road. And that was pretty much the main event of that one. They had some interviews in between. It's not worth really getting into, but Ring of Honor does a pretty good job. They are like back during the territory days. This is the best way to describe it. Back during the territory days, and for people who don't know, before there was a WWE and WCW and stuff like that, it was very regionalized, where depending on where you lived as to you might just get one particular show of wrestling where there were 8, 9, 10 territories, maybe more. Ring of Honor is very much like when you flip on Saturday morning your local access television and you get the local wrestling show, and that's very much what Ring of Honor is. It's very big on talent, good on production. Like I said, you may not know who some of these guys are. Sometimes people will cross through there. A lot of the people from AEW and a few people from WWE have came through there. Samoa Joe, Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, at some point, Cody and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, and a lot of those guys have come through there as well. But it's pretty solid. It comes on either Friday or Saturday nights on here locally, one of the Sports South or Fox Sports South. It's on one of those. Just search for it. They're probably on Hulu or Netflix too. That moved us to Raw. Raw, once again, we're in the empty performance center. You had Byron Saxon Jerry the King Lawler, and for the life of me, I can't remember the other guy. The other guy is like a Michael Cole in training. He's pretty good. He's the point man. But Raw opened up with Edge cutting a promo. They did a he pretty much him and Edge or I mean, Edge and Randy Orton are gonna probably face at WrestleMania. I'm glad to see Edge back. I don't think it's gonna be a full-time back. I think it's very much gonna be a one-off. They were looking for star power. A little bit later in the show, I will say something about WrestleMania. They have decided to do it completely differently. Not only is it going to be from the Performance Center, but there's another twist that they added in recent days. They did a Royal Rumble replay, and in a Royal Rumble, you usually use it as a way to boost up somebody into a bigger role, boost up a handful of people. In this one, Brock Lesnar started. He was the reigning champion. He still is. He started just mowing through people for a while, mowing through people, mowing through people. And then Ricochet, who he has faced before, and Drew McIntyre, who he is not, kind of started to get him a little bit of a fit. And between the two of them, Claymore kick by Drew McIntyre sends Brock out of the match. So that opened it up. At that point, for anybody, whoever wins a Royal Rumble can challenge any of the champions he likes. Same way with the Women's Royal Rumble, we will get to that in a minute. But as we see another phone update, see what that's all about. Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute. It kept going back and forth, back and forth. It came down to Randy Orton, Edge, Roman Reigns, and Drew McIntyre. What started the whole thing between Edge and Randy Orton is because in this match, Edge threw Randy Orton out. Drew McIntyre ends up winning this. He will face. He will face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. They've kind of went back and forth in recent weeks, attacking each other, dropping each other. You know, whether Drew's the one that beats him, Brock or not, I think this is going to help put Drew in the top. He was having a meteoric rise a handful of years ago, his first time through WWE, had some backstage issues, and then had some visa issues that ultimately had him get released. He ended up going to TNA slash Impact Wrestling, built up, and then got the call to come back. And when that happened, he's made the most of it. He's been on a pretty good rise. So I think he's probably one of those next big guys up on the main event level. Let's see, what else do we get after that? The Undertaker. Came out, and it was supposed to be the him and AJ Styles contract signing. Of course, that always goes sideways. He ended up taking out Gallows and Anderson as well. That's gonna be fun. AJ and the Undertaker. I really don't care who wins. That's two of the best. You always look for a WrestleMania opponent for the Undertaker, somebody that's gonna be fresh or new or give you something you haven't seen before. Let's see, I'm trying to find something for the next part. But no, Undertaker AJ, I think it might be one of the best matches on the WrestleMania card, although there's some pretty good ones stacking up. We'll see where that goes. And then the last thing on Raw, well, second last thing, they had Andrade, who is another rising star versus Rey Mysterio. This has been going on for, feels like ages. Probably been going on about 4 or 5 weeks. And Asuka was at ringside doing commentary. I don't know what for. Really didn't have anything to do with anything. But Andrade ends up with the victory in that one. But let's see. It's AEW. We get an AEW in a second. Let's see. We're going to just search for this in real time and see if we can find it because the site I usually use is being very dumb. All right, let's talk some Impact Wrestling. Impact Wrestling on Tuesday nights on Access Television. It's also where you can find WOW Women of Wrestling. It's a pretty solid women's show. You can also find New Japan Pro Wrestling out of Japan. It's where a lot of the guys you see now came from. Nakamura. Kenny Omega, all those fun people. But it opens up with Josh Alexander and Ethan Page versus TJP and Fall Out TJP, you might remember him from WWE, came out with the theme music and the video that had to do with video games. That was him. And Josh Alexander and Ethan Page, when they put them together as a team, didn't quite know how things were going to go. They're a pretty good team. They're the current tag team champions. They're called the North. But this was a good match. Had a couple false endings. False ending, for those who don't know a lot about wrestling, is when it seems like it's going to be the end of the match and turns out it's not. Kind of a think of it like an encore. You're seeing your favorite band, you think it's their last song, and then they play another. And that's kind of where this goes. But the North ended up with the victory for. I believe the North ended up winning this one, but the referee was knocked around so many times that it kind of sets up a rematch at some point. Another fantastic match that they had was Daga, who is a great lucha style talent versus Jake Crist, who he might be almost as good as Sami Callihan, which is the leader of the group that he's a part of, the Crist brothers, Jake and I forgot the his brother's name, but. No, Jake Crist, me, super, super good talent. This went pretty well. I believe Daga ended up with the victory. These are two guys that I don't know that they know each other very well, but they seem to have instant chemistry. It seemed to look like they had worked together a lot, even if they hadn't. And it's something that maybe they could build with, because Jake Crist is a good tag team guy, but he seems to be really shining as a singles guy if they want to do that somewhere down the road. Yeah, the debut and new guy of Chris Bay, he took on Damian Drake. Damian Drake's just kind of one of the smaller guys that kind of gets to go out there occasionally and enhance other people. Bay ended up with the win. And it could be a good launching point. They could use another guy that could do some of the things that he does, some of the flips and the fun, exciting things without being too over the top. You had the returning Kira Hogan, who is from right down the road here somewhere in Georgia, versus Lacey Rain. Lacey is or Lacey Ryan, rather. Lacey is a relatively new one to Impact Wrestling. She's a pretty solid wrestler. She had some good moments in this one before Kira ended up with an okay win. Kira's kind of lost in this weird Impact Wrestling shuffle where the creative team just really can't find a good story for her, and they put her in dumb ones, and they don't book the best matches, don't put the greatest matchups together. She's a pretty solid talent. She's still got room to go, room to grow even. They got to do something. She's wasting. You had cancel culture, which is basically RVD and Joey Ryan, although they're trying to play the opposite of their what made them famous. RVD is known for his jump kicks, his frog splash, and the fact that when people say nobody gets higher than RVD, they are not talking about distance. So they're downplaying that, and Joey Ryan, who is normally 1970s sleazeball, but does it better than anybody. It's one of the best gimmicks around for a while. He's suddenly doing the Joseph Park thing, where instead of being Abyss, you take off the mask, you comb your hair, put glasses on, and you try to go straight-laced, and they're trying to do that. Hopefully, Joey, if you listen to my show, and I would hope you do, but if you listen to my show, go back to being Joey Ryan. I know why you're trying to change it up. You're trying to do these different things here. But, you know, outside of the appendage flip, we'll try to keep it PG for my audiences here. Outside of the appendage flip, you're a good, solid worker, man. Go back to doing that. If you want to not go so sleaze on the gimmick, so sleaze on the act, and just be a solid worker in there, sure. But I think this new thing's, I don't know, it's going to be a lot of miss than hit, in my opinion. They went against the Deaners, which are a kind of a redneck, bearded tag team. They're quite good. They're really appealing. The crowd really catches on to them. But the Deaners should be pushed a little more. They are a very solid tag team. You should push them into maybe taking on the North once the TJP Falaba opponents kind of wither away. I believe that was all the matches they've had on there. Probably add more. I just. Yeah, just uneventful. That's the best way to put it. Uneventful. And that moves us on to NXT. Well, this is dragging a little bit, but I promise we'll get to some NFL stuff here in a minute. But NXT, which used to be kind of the farm club for WWE. They're kind of trying to promote it more as a third brand, even though the established stars are only established to the niche audience they've had up until now. They've only been a, I call it public. Before, to watch NXT, you had to subscribe to the WWE.com network, which I've debated getting back because some good stuff. But also, they're trying to push them as a third brand, and at times they're probably their second best show. So more power to them. You had Triple H and Tom Phillips who came on to tell everybody it's going to be unique because NXT is going to be empty like they've done the other shows up to this point. They do a video package where they show Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. These guys started in NXT together. They signed one, then eventually had to sign the other after a big tournament. They're really pushing this storyline when both of these guys should be going for the world title. But it's kind of a logjam down there sometimes, and Adam Cole is beating pretty much everybody. I think the only person that could beat him anytime in the near future would be Keith Lee. And it will probably be right before he gets called up to Raw or SmackDown, which I feel like could be coming quickly. But they showed this. It took a good bit of time. I mean, a good bit of the show was that particular video. Then they talked about Charlotte as she won the women's Royal Rumble and said she hadn't really come up with which either Raw or SmackDown championship she wanted to go for, to which she was interrupted. By Rhea Ripley, who is a budding star in NXT that is she ready for Charlotte? I don't know. But is she really good up to this point? Yeah, she is. And she's really got the crowd behind her. It could be a good moment if they let Charlotte go heel for this match. That's what I would do. Should be good. They also mentioned Finn Balor. And he had a big video package that said that, yeah, I was the first Universal Champion on Monday Night Raw, which is true. He beat Seth Rollins, got hurt during the match, had to surrender the title the very next night, and never got a chance to have it back. Never really got that chance to have it back because the landscape had changed so much by the time he come back. He's kind of been middle card talent ever since. And kind of looking for a place to kind of latch back on. It looks like he's going to go back to NXT to not only help build that brand, to show that it isn't a minor league because a major world star is there. But he also said he's 38 years old, and in NXT, he felt more like he could wrestle his way, and there's that excitement. It gets him motivated to go and get to have that style matches where on the bigger levels, he felt like he wasn't being able to be himself. So he wanted to go where that fire was.
Makes a lot of sense.
And he made some good points as it was all going. So they talk about Rhea Ripley and they tell her background story. That's pretty much the way they decided to do NXT for this week. So we move on to AEW. AEW, for people who don't know, is a wrestling company started up by Tony Khan, who is the son of Shad Khan, who owns, what is it? It's Everton or Fulham. It's one of the EPL teams and also the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony Khan, big-time wrestling fan, sat down with Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, and there might be a couple others, but they decided to put together a wrestler-ran promotion, which is what AEW is. So, it's kind of like if you used to watch AEW, if you used to watch WCW early on, Super Station WCW, but with newer age talent. So, it's fun. And I like almost every guy that got over there. Jeff Cobb's been over there. I just mentioned him a while ago. But it starts. I give AEW credit. They have done something that nobody else has done yet with these empty arena shows. If you weren't on the card that night, and even some of them that were, if you weren't in the active match, you were sitting ringside. They had a couple rows, and they were down there. Some were drinking wine. Some were yelling at the other wrestlers, being a fan. Some were eating food. They would interact with them. I think it worked. They were the first ones to actually put a crowd down there of fellow wrestlers and crew. So you get credit there. This opens with Cody, Kenny Omega, and Matt Jackson because Matt Jackson, one half of the Young Bucks. Nick Jackson is pretty banged up, enough to where he is not going to be on the pay-per-view that is tonight or tomorrow night. But they have a big match. They come out and talk and call out Hangman Page and say, we need the real Hangman there. They'd make sure you're on our side. They are. They also say how bizarre it is to be at an empty place like that, but they still do the pyro, they still do the intro to the show and let people know that it's business as usual. Hopefully you're watching it at home. Wish you were here. MJF, another budding young talent, is being interviewed by Tony Schiavone. I'm not sure that Schiavone was ready to talk to MJF, but MJF does his thing really, really well. He kind of helped put himself over and let people know that he was going to pretty much hang out at ringside for the entire show. Yeah, JR and Excalibur and Taz are your announcers. I like this tandem. JR calls the action. Excalibur explains to JR and Taz who these people are. The ones that they don't know, a lot of the newer talent. And Taz has that, when I was in the ring, this is what they're thinking mentality. And it works great. Opening match was the Lucha Brothers, which is Pentagon Jr. and Rey Fénix, versus the Best Friends. Best Friends are Chucky Taylor, and... I don't know if he goes by Trent Barretta anymore or not, but Trent, they're a fantastic team. Just a fantastic team. Orange Cassidy is the best part of their team, though, and he is the kind of manager. Just do me a favor. When you're done listening to this, pull up your phone, look up Orange Cassidy, and just watch some videos. That guy is insanely talented. The Lucha Brothers end up with the victory in that one. I don't want to ruin it in case you want to go back and watch it. It was a really good match. And by telling you the ending is not ruining this match whatsoever. For wrestlers that typically like to feed off the crowd, which is a lot of the AEW guys, the entire card was able to kind of harness their own energy and the energy of the people at ringside to kind of keep in the flow of things. MJF and Sean Spears were the two that were drinking wine and seemed to be gambling on various things in the ring. It looked like they were having the most fun of anybody. We had a big women's match where Hikaru Shida, Chris Statlander, up-and-coming talent in the women's division, one of my favorites over there. Penelope Ford, who I think was making her debut. She had Kip Sabian, her boyfriend, beside her. Rio was also in this match. Pretty decent match. Penelope Ford did miss a move she was trying pretty badly, and it not only looked horrible, but I'm surprised nobody got hurt in the process. These things happen. These things, even John Cena misses stuff, so I'm not worried about that. But if Penelope's going to continue to kind of be edgy, she's going to have to button it up a little bit. Shida ended up winning that match. That brought up our next match, which was the Butcher and the Blade. Unfortunately, there was no bunny with them. Once again, that's worth looking up. The Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny. In fact, the Bunny and Orange Cassidy had a great interaction a couple weeks ago, which is always up on YouTube and one of the best things. They were against Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. The Jurassic Express, the little, I don't ever remember the little guy's name, but the like mini Jungle Boy wasn't there as well. I even put on here no little guy. Jurassic Express ends up winning this because the Butcher and the Blade, instead of finishing them off, turned to MJF, who was trying to tell them to end it now as opposed to continue on the path they were on, and they got caught. And when they got caught, that was the end of it. Under the Black Hat is a new book from Jim Ross. I encourage people to go get it. I'm going to be looking for it as soon as this show is over. Jim has always got great things to say, and his insight from the business and the barbecue world are unparalleled. And then we had Evil Uno come out with Stu, and they kept telling Chris Daniels and Kazarian about the Exalted One. And Chris Daniels tried to call their bluff and say, "There is no Exalted One. You're just trying to get us to believe in your hype of all this secret organization and all this stuff here." To which Evil Uno said, "Au contraire, mon frère, check the entrance." The Exalted One comes out, and when he takes off his I can't remember if it was a mask or if it was just a hood, but he takes off his hood. Lo and behold, it is Brody Lee. A lot of people may not know who Brody Lee is. I will tell you who Brody Lee is. He is Luke Harper from the WWE. One of my favorites, one of my dad's favorites. It's making him start watching again. Brody Lee is now in charge of this crazy secret society organization that they're going to come out. It's. You know, there's always that one crazy faction that tries to come out and take over things. Well, that's what they're trying to do. They start with Chris Daniels and Kazarian, so we'll see where that goes. At one point, Shivani interviews Jake Roberts and Lance Archer. Lance Archer is another one that has been around the game a long time. Recently in New Japan, he's been WWE, he's been ECW, he's been TNA Impact Wrestling. Big tough bruiser of a guy. He's gonna be great. He don't need Jake the Snake with him. It just gives Jake something to do. But they interviewed him. He and they kind of pushed their agenda that I think Cody is gonna be their first target. Then we had our main event. Main event, Chris Jericho was on announcer duty, guest announcer duty, as it was Ortiz, Jake Hagar, and Sammy Guevara with them, and Santana that were against, that's part of Jericho's group. They were against Matt Jackson, Hangman Adam Page, and Cody with Kenny Omega at ringside. The winner of this got an advantage for the pay-per-view coming up because it's going to be a big five-on-four. This particular moment with Nick Jackson out. Remember, I teased something earlier in the show that's going to come to fruition in a minute. But through all these crazy things that happened and some things at ringside and stuff like that, basically Team Jericho ends up with the win. They have the advantage, and they say, not only do we have the advantage, some sort of advantage for the pay-per-view, but we have the man advantage because there's Jericho, there's Santana, there's Ortiz, Jake Hager, there's Sammy Guevara. That's five against Matt Jackson, Adam Page, Cody, and Kenny Omega. That's four. To which they grab the microphone and say, oh, yeah, why don't you look behind us? And off in the middle part of the arena, about halfway up, was Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy is going to join because Matt Jackson said, there was a guy who owes me a favor. There he is. So looks like Matt Hardy is going to be a part of AEW going forward, at least into this match and maybe beyond. I'm excited. I've always liked Matt Hardy a little better than Jeff. Was never a big Hardy Boys fan, but his Matt Hardy stuff he does with the delete and the stuff like that, I'm really digging it. So look forward to seeing exactly how that's going to go. And then lastly, just got finished watching right before I did this show. Let's go over this week's SmackDown. We'll talk some NFL. We'll get out of here. It'll be a long show for once. And I want to throw this disclaimer out here before I talk about the last wrestling show. If you like the way I talk about wrestling and you think maybe it should be its own show, or if you don't like the way I talk, or you don't like the fact that I'm even talking wrestling and you want me to just talk NFL and other things and want it to be separate, let me know. At this point, we just did the last board check for a while. There is kind of a space available in case we wanted to add another show or potentially start one up anyway. So, you know, if you think it should be its own show, let me know. And we will do a wrestling show, and then we will do our normal NFL and everything else show. Just let me know. This week's SmackDown, Cole and Mojo Rawley introduced Gronk, who is going to host WrestleMania. It is now going to be two nights. It's going to be April 4th and 5th, starting at 7. My guess is going to go to like 7 to 10. WrestleMania is usually 5 or 6 hours anyway. But they introduced Gronk, and then King Corbin comes out. King Corbin starts trying to rile up Gronk, to which Elias comes out. Corbin says, if I let you sing your song, will you shut up? Elias says, sure. Elias starts singing his song. Corbin interrupts him anyway. He starts getting Gronk's face. Elias jumps in, throws Corbin out of the ring, and Gronk says, even though I don't have the power to make a match, I would suggest that you two have a match at WrestleMania. That's probably where it was leading anyway. Gronk hosting, and the fact that him and Mojo was trying to keep Gronk in a WWE level way of doing things. When he was kind of veering off the path a little bit, Mojo would jump in and kind of corral him. Gronk's gonna be fine. He's gonna be good. He's gonna be a good host. And then on top of that, I think we're gonna like some of the stuff he does. They're gonna put him with Mojo for a little while. But at some point, they'll face each other. At some point, he'll go against some other people. I think it's going to be a good thing. Let's see. That set up Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro with Sami Zayn versus Drew Gulak and Daniel Bryan. Good match. And once again, Gulak and Bryan triumph. It sets up a match for next week where Drew Gulak is going to face Shinsuke Nakamura. If Gulak is able to win, then Daniel Bryan gets an Intercontinental title shot at WrestleMania versus Sami Zayn. Pretty much tells you Drew Gulak is probably going to win. I'll go ahead and say that, but that should be a good match because Gulak is finally getting a little bit of a push. I kind of like where they're going with some of the things there. Sasha and Bayley come out and proceeded to run their mouth and some of the stuff I said before. Paige was talking, interacting with them through a Skype broadcast on the screen and set up the WrestleMania match. It is going to be Bayley defending her title against Lacey Evans, Dana Brooke, Tamina, Naomi, and Sasha Banks, to which Sasha just kind of got a grin on her face, and Bayley kind of stormed out. Sounds about right. They replay a match from 6 years ago's WrestleMania where Bray Wyatt and Cena faced off. Cena ends up getting the win, of course. This was supposedly the launching point of where The Fiend started, because Bray said it sent his world in such a tailspin that it drove him into the Fiend level. I think it's a good launching point for what they're doing. Maybe they'll push Bray up a little more even by beating John Cena at WrestleMania. I'll have more predictions when we get closer, but we're 2 weeks out of WrestleMania, so you know we'll go from there. The Miz and Morrison show, they were in the ring. They sit in their director chairs. I think it's called the dirt sheet. And they proceeded to throw it to people in the audience to decide who their opponent should be. Well, it was just them dressed up as these tag teams. It was pretty funny. They imitated the New Day. They imitated the Usos. And they have Heavy Machinery as well. So those are your three other top teams. You know, if you think about it, all you're missing is Dolph and Rude. Dolph is going to play into this in a minute. And Lucha House Party, which I told you are kind of the filler entertainment of that anyway. So they'll go on and do their own thing. But this led to Miz and Morrison versus Heavy Machinery. During the match, Dolph comes out. He distracts Otis. Otis kind of flips out a little bit after seeing some Instagram photos that Dolph puts up on the screen. And it causes Otis to use a chair on Miz and Morrison, which gives the DQ win to Miz and Morrison. And then lastly, we had Goldberg and Roman Reigns in the contract signing. They both had some good comments to each other. They got in each other's faces, and they signed the contract. SmackDown goes off with them staring at each other. I thought it was spectacular the way they did it. Finally, a contract signing where there are not punches thrown. Thank goodness. All right, let's talk some football. Let's talk some football. Basically, I'm going to talk about some of the trades. I'm going to talk about two people that are kind of left out on a limb by themselves. And I'm going to talk about some of the bigger signings. If I miss one that you want me to talk about, send it in. I will gladly talk about it on next week's show. We will have a little more of a regular schedule next week. It's just based off the turn of events this week. We just had to kind of do them when we could do them. Let's talk about some of the big trades, right? Or some of the big, some of the big trades. You have Nick Foles going to Chicago. He is going to back up, my guess is he's going to back up Trubisky until, like I say, when the biscuit crumbles, they're going to turn to the baby horse. Baby horse known as a foal. Let me just catch a bite up on that. I think he is, they're trading for him, but you don't pay him that kind of money to be a backup, and B, they pretty much know they're going to move on from Trubisky, so this is the way to do so. As we eclipse the 1 hour mark for the first time in a long time. Lots to talk about. Calais Campbell. These are all Jaguars from them we'll talk about here. Calais Campbell and AJ Bouye, who were traded. Makes you wonder who else out of Jacksonville could be. At the moment, Calais Campbell is the one I think is going to do the best. He's going to Baltimore. Desmond Trufant, who was signed by Detroit. Eli Apple is now in Oakland. Vic Beasley is now in Tennessee. And let's start with these big trades. Houston is going to get David Johnson, a 2020 second and fourth round pick. Arizona is going to get DeAndre Hopkins and a 2020 fourth round pick. Okay. A lot of people think, oh, the Cardinals absolutely fleeced them. They won this trade hands down, 80-20. I won't go that far. One, David Johnson, now healthy, is looking to rebound his career. In Houston, where the pressure would be off, he doesn't have to be the bell cow. There's a chance there. Plus, he was about to be odd man out where he was at, so he gets out. The picks are the picks. DeAndre Hopkins is a top 10 receiver, at times top 5. He's 3 years out of his next deal, and he already wants to negotiate. He wants Julio Jones top money. And Bill O'Brien just got tired of hearing it. So to me, that's what happened, is he got tired of dealing with a diva receiver who 3 years out of his contract running out wants to talk about a contract. Most of the time, they don't do that. In New England, you don't do that. And that's where Bill O'Brien comes from. You got to think about that. So Arizona is going to get a big receiver. They're going to have to deal with him being a diva sometimes. It could, you know, if Kingsbury and Kyler Murray can get in his head a little bit and go, just play ball, end of the year, we'll start discussing those things. Then should be good. And like I said, I think David Johnson's going to rebound. He should get, I don't know, he might have 700 or 800 yards this year. I think he might have 1,000. I don't know. Should be pretty good, though. But as far as winner or loser, we're not going to know. We're not going to know until we see these guys on the field, which hopefully is coming sooner rather than later. Indianapolis got DeForest Buckner, and all they had to give up was the 13th overall pick this year. Okay, well, if you look at Indy, outside of a receiver, which a lot of people thought they'd get at 13, they don't need a whole lot. They signed Phillip Rivers. We'll get to that in a minute. They have good running backs. They have a pretty solid line. Like I said, receiver is a little bit of a thing. They got good tight ends. They're trying to shore up the defensive line, and DeForest Buckner is a run stopper. Is that because of DeMarco Murray? Maybe. Not DeMarco Murray. Derrick Henry. That's who replaced DeMarco Murray. Is that for Derrick Henry? Probably. Probably has a lot to do with it. I thought it was a good move. 13th overall pick. Yeah, it's maybe a little high, but you're not going to find a DeForest Buckner at number 13. So it works. It's like when the Cowboys got Amari Cooper a couple years ago. They traded a first-round pick for him and said, well, there's not an Amari Cooper in the first round of the draft. So it's like drafting Amari Cooper, which luckily they decided to sign him. And that's a whole different thing. In the last big trade, Buffalo is going to get Stephon Diggs. Minnesota is going to get a 2020 first, fifth, and sixth, and a fourth round pick in 2021. I'll be honest, it seems like a lot. But Stephon Diggs wanted out of Minnesota. Now he's going to Buffalo. Maybe the change of scenery is going to help him. You know, maybe the change of scenery is going to help him. Minnesota, Buffalo. Those are two teams I keep my eye on this year. Yeah, I think both of them are strong enough to make some good runs. Let's see. Let's go through some of these signings. Tennessee tagged Henry. That was a smart thing. And the reason they did that is because they signed Ryan Tannehill. They actually used Brady as collateral. The fact that they could go after Brady, use that in order to get Tannehill to sign a smaller deal and stay in Tennessee. I like it. Business as usual there. Teddy Bridgewater is going to Carolina. I like it. He was rumored to either be going to the Bucs or the Panthers because, well, there's no room in Atlanta. And he's pretty pissed off about the New Orleans thing. A lot of people say, no, Teddy's laid back. No, he's pissed off about it. How do I know he's ticked? Because he went to a direct rival of the team he was just on. One of those, You work at McDonald's, McDonald's fires you, you go across the street to the Wendy's and go, I'll show you. That's just human nature, and that's what people do. And I don't, you know, I can't disagree with it. I think Teddy's going to be great under Matt Rhule and everybody over there, you know? And of course, the big one, Brady to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Apparently, it was between the Chargers and them. A lot of factors, including the fact that he wanted to stay on the East Coast. And I think he likes Bruce Arians. I think that was the X factor, is working with somebody like Bruce Arians. I think Peyton Manning might have had something to do with it, might have put in a word like, you know, that dude knows what he's doing. And Brady to Tampa Bay, though, is going to be fantastic. It's and so now think about the NFC South. You have Matt Ryan in Atlanta. You have they re-signed Drew Brees. He stays in New Orleans. You get Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina, and you get Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Wow. Now two of those moves are gonna cue up the last thing I'm gonna talk about here in a minute. But wow, what a loaded division. But quarterback wise, this division is usually pretty loaded. Earlier, let's see, Rivers to Indy that I talked about earlier. If his arm can hold, then this could be a good pickup. If not, you better have a backup plan. If his arm goes off the cliff, you ain't gonna catch it. Earlier today, Emmanuel Sanders signed with the New Orleans Saints. Yep, the best team in the NFC South just got even better. Now they can run him up one side and Michael Thomas up the other, and I don't know, run their backup quarterback up the middle of the field, and you're screwed. Because they have two running backs that'll run over you too. I thought it was a great pickup. Melvin Gordon, think he's mad at the Chargers? I'd say so. He signed with rival Denver. Signed a 2-year deal to go to the Denver Broncos, which in return are probably going to get rid of Royce Freeman. But I very much like Philip Lindsay, and Philip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon. Good Lord. Beast backfield right there. Todd Gurley got released by the LA Rams and a day later signed with the hometown Atlanta Falcons. I say hometown because he played here at UGA. UGA fans are excited. This helps the Falcons sell more tickets because more people will want to come see him play. And you got to think, he is basically replacing Devontae Freeman. Him and Freeman are similar. He's a cheaper Devontae Freeman, and he's a little better. In my opinion, not the personal Devontae Freeman, but Todd Gurley on a normal day is better than Devontae Freeman. So I hope this works out. I hope Gurley is healed. He's not as banged up as we all thought he was. They got him on a cheap 1 year, $6 million deal anyway. So if it doesn't work, he only had $6 million invested in it. The Rams are paying the rest of salary. Witten and Mariota are going to Oakland. Very much like that. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, where is that story? Right before we came on today, I saw that Oakland got somebody else. Nelson Aguilar is going there as well. So Derek Carr and Mariota are going to have plenty of fun people to throw to. I think Jason Witten there, you got to think they've built their own Monday Night Football booth with GM Mike Mayock. You got tight end Jason Witten, who's done it before, and you got the head coach John Gruden, who has also done it before. They got a heck of a booth. But watch Oakland. It's interesting the way they do things, but seems to have a way of working out. They come up just short last year of surprising the Chiefs, but now the Chiefs are going to see them coming. So we'll have to see what happens with that. Let's see. Lastly, Gerald McCoy is going to go to the Dallas Cowboys. Now, while people would say, "Well, his best days are past him," probably right. They're not signing him to be a monster. They're signing him to be part of the rotation and to be a run stopper and to just plug up the middle of the field. Gerald McCoy is great at that. And if you need him to occasionally make plays, he will do that too. But I know it's predominantly wrestling dominated today. We will see what the future holds as far as what is on. If I watch any live events that are on television or hear any news one way or the other, I will add that into it. But yeah, let me know if you think we should split the shows or we should keep them the same way. But that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you for tuning in to this week's Sports Club. We will see you guys next week. Stay safe, and we'll see you guys on the other side. Let me see you just push it up, let me see you just wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble. Get up, get up.